Last Wednesday night, I got a phone call from one of the members of my old shul, Shaarei Tefillah, and this was before any of the Jewish organizations had publicly taken up collections and come out and made statements about the rachmanus that we must feel and the way that we should react toward the terrible tragedy in Haiti. And the fellow called me up to discuss what exactly our reaction really should be. Is it appropriate for us to say Tehillim between Mincha and Maariv each night? Is it appropriate for us to give money? Are we mechuyev to give money? Are we mechuyev to say Tehillim? Is it usur perhaps for some reason to do one or both of those things, saying Tehillim and giving money? Does it make a difference what religion is practiced or was practiced by the victims of the terrible tragedy? And we spoke over the issues for a few minutes, for a little while. But my feeling for a few days at least was that any such discussions, most of us will figure out intuitively what the right thing to do is. And those who can't figure it out intuitively hopefully will seek guidance and will speak to people who can help them figure out what the right thing to do is. But I didn't think that the discussions of the pertinent halachos of Lo Seichanem and of all of the other areas of halacha were necessarily meant for the domain of the Rishus HaRabim. I thought it was really supposed to be something, as in general, many of the halachic discussions, the technical halachic discussions of Jew and non-Jew, I think, generally speaking, are best left in the private domain, in the Rishus HaYachid. But as the days passed, and I heard more and more people saying things and misapplying halachos, and thinking that halachos applied to this case that simply did not apply. And people made assumptions about priorities and about a sense of rachmanus that I thought were inappropriate. And after speaking in shul on Shabbos to my own kihila, several people came over to me afterwards and asked that I spread this to a wider audience. So I'm always very hesitant to speak to anybody outside of my own kihila. But it's hard to even put my finger on exactly why I feel it's necessary, but I guess just because so many people are struggling with really figuring out how much of what is being said is, do we really mean, and how much is only being said because of what they perceive Darkei Shalom to be, which is we're afraid of the Goyim or something like that. So I thought it's important to present what I think the halacha tells us in this way. And let me just preface with the following thing. I was speaking to my wife the other night after we watched a clip on the internet of some of the horrible, horrible devastation. And her immediate reaction, she said to me, "Don't you wish we could just get on a plane and go there and help these people? Nabach, I mean, their bodies scattered all over the place, missing people. It's so difficult to watch. You just want to go and help." And I couldn't agree more. A Jew has to feel that way. If a Jew sees that, you see what people are going through, and you don't feel a sense of rachmanus, you have to check your yichus. Something's wrong if a Jew doesn't feel that way. It's what a Jew must feel. What I want to do is explain why I think we must feel that way, and why the halachos that people often quote are sometimes confused, are sometimes misapplied, and most importantly, why I believe none of them really apply to this particular case. So just in order to frame the halachic discussion, which again, the halachic discussion I think is going to be largely irrelevant, but I think people are confusing the halacha, and because I like to learn halacha, it bothers me that people confuse halachos. So I'd like to try to lay it out there. So in order to frame the discussion properly, I think it's important to know that in general, Chazal put non-Jews in three separate categories. On the worst end, there are non-Jews who are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. We abhor Avodah Zarah, we don't like Avodah Zarah, we view Avodah Zarah as one of the worst things a human being of any religion can do. And Chazal were not very kind to real, genuine Ovdei Avodah Zarah. On the other end of the spectrum, you have a ger toshav. Now, a ger toshav is the highest level that a non-Jew can rise to, and we have a chiyuv, not just a mitzvah, a chiyuv to support them in any way that we can, to give tzedakah to them, to be kind to them. Mitzvah lahachayoso, a ger toshav is on the high end of the spectrum. And then in the middle, you have a typical non-Jew, someone who's not an Ovid Avodah Zarah, but is not a ger toshav either. Typically, a ger toshav is defined as someone who accepts upon himself the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. There is a das yachid in poskim that any basically moral person living outside of Eretz Yisrael, even if he's any basically moral non-Jew living outside of Eretz Yisrael, has the status of a ger toshav, even if he doesn't observe the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. But I think that it's a minority view. In terms of the facts on the ground in Haiti and what category the people of Haiti fit into, so just know that largely Haiti is a Roman Catholic nation. Apparently there are significant but unknown numbers of people who practice voodoo. The reason those numbers are unknown is because many of the Roman Catholics also practice voodoo. And if you're a Roman Catholic who practices voodoo, you're sufficiently theologically confused that it's a little bit embarrassing. So it's not something that you would publicize, but it's something that apparently a lot of people do. Voodoo obviously comes a lot closer to Avodah Zarah than Christianity does. It is a machlokas rishonim in regards to Christianity, but it seems that it seems that contemporary poskim assume that Christianity, a belief in shituf, a belief in multiple gods, it's a complicated discussion, but many contemporary poskim, Rav Avadia Yosef certainly, hold that it is not Avodah Zarah, and it may not even be usher, Yaakov Emden famously, that it may not even be usher for a non-Jew to believe in Christianity. So let's assume the majority of the people that we're speaking about are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and there may be some who have some practices that may border on Avodah Zarah. So let me just clarify the issues over here. I think there are three separate issues that follow three separate rules in Halacha. And again, I don't think any of them apply to this case. Just want to clarify what they are. First, the Pasuk in Mishlei, Perek Yud Aleph, tells us, Ba'avod Rasha'im Rina, that when Rasha'im are wiped out, there's rejoicing. When the wicked are gone, we rejoice. So somebody asked me if, in fact, there were people who were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, should we be celebrating the demise of Ovdei Avodah Zarah? So it's very important to clarify that such a feeling and such a comment is inappropriate and it's wrong. The idea of Bavod Rasha'im Rina is not for an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Bavod Rasha'im Rina, the Gemara uses to explain in Sanhedrin Daf Lamed Tes why it is that the Jewish people were allowed to say Shira Alayam, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself was not happy. There was loss of human life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is never happy at the loss of human life. And when the Malachim wanted to say Shira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Masa Yadai Tovim B'yam Ba'atem Omrim Shira. My people are drowning in the sea, not my chosen nation. Humanity, my Tzelem Elokim, is drowning and you're going to say Shira? Aye, so why were the Jews allowed to say Shira? Because if someone is holding a gun to your head, and then you hear a shot, and you see the person who is holding the gun to your head go down, because someone had just saved you, you sing Shira. They were directly threatening you. If Ahmadinejad would fall ill, I don't think we'd be praying for him. When someone's a direct threat to the Jewish people, yes, then you sing Shira at their demise. But someone who's not a direct threat to us, Ovdei Avodah Zarah or not, we don't sing Shira. Chas v'shalom. It's not even a thought. So that's the first issue. That's obviously Davar Pashut. No relevance over here. The second issue. Over the past several days, many local, national, and international Jewish organizations have taken up collections on behalf of the victims of the tragedy in Haiti. And the question was asked, isn't there an Isser in the Torah to give gifts to non-Jews? Lo Sechanem. Gemara Avodah Zarah Daf Chaf learns three Isurim de Oraisa from Lo Sechanem, including giving gifts to non-Jews? And the answer is that it's an explicit Gemara in Maseches Gittin that that's a total misapplication of the rule. The Gemara Maseches Gittin tells us, Mefarnes Paskin in Shulchan Aruch, Mefarnesim Aniyei Akum Im Aniyei Yisrael Mepnei Darkei Shalom, that we support non-Jewish poor together with the Jewish poor for the sake of maintaining peace. There is a minority view in Rishonim that limits that halacha to situation where the non-Jews present themselves to you together with the Jews, and it would look bad if you gave to one group and not the other. Well, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't assume that way. Shulchan Aruch paskins, we support non-Jewish aniyim. When people are in need, mipnei darkei shalom. Now, what does mipnei darkei shalom mean? This is a critical point. Mipnei darkei shalom, first of all, this makes no difference. Darkei shalom applies whether they're Ovid Avodah Zarah or not. And second of all, mipnei darkei shalom doesn't just mean that we really wish we wouldn't have to, but we do it anyway. Mipnei darkei shalom means that if a Jew is going to scream, where was the rest of the world at the Holocaust? How come no one was there to help us? No one had our backs. How can that same Jew go and turn around when 100,000 people perish in a single day and not do anything about it? How can one be so self-centered to complain? They should have taken care of us when we don't take care of others. Living in this world involves a certain relationship, a certain reciprocity. And if we're going to expect to be treated a certain way, we need to treat others that way. That's Mipnei Darkei Shalom. However, I think it's important to realize, and I haven't heard many people make this point, that if part of the reason we give is a sense of Darkei Shalom, is that people should see that Jews give, whereas normally the greatest kiyum of the level of tzedakah, the greatest level of tzedakah, is when you give privately where no one knows who it was that gave. I think over here it's just the opposite. Much better than texting on your phone to Haiti or whatever and adding $10 to your telephone bill would be to give the $18 through the OU, and shouldn't say dollar amounts, whatever your priorities are, to give the money through the OU, to give the money through a major Jewish organization, so that when the money comes in, people can see this is Jewish money. Jews stand for taking care of other people. That's Mipnei Darkei Shalom. So I think someone said, I was talking to Rabbi Broid last week, and he said, well, you know, if there's a list that comes through and says, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz gave money, I don't think anyone's going to think it was from a guy. But still, it's a much greater Kiddush Hashem. It's a much greater Darkei Shalom. If the money comes in from a Jewish organization, as a group, I think that's an important point of the Mipnei Darkei Shalom. But there's one more point, and this is why I don't believe this whole discussion even applies over here. And that is, this is not a question. In this particular case, when you're dealing with 100,000 lives, this is not a question of giving a gift to a non-Jew. It's a question of rebuilding a country in ruins. The Jewish people hold the value of Yeshuvo Shel Olam to be an incredibly high value. The fact that we dislike destruction, we revel in the beauty of a functioning society, that's critical. That's a major value for us. In ancient times, when people would, an army would come and conquer a city, and they had no use for the city, what would they do? They'd burn it down. It's an isodoraisa for us to do that. We don't destroy, we build. Milu es ha'aretz v'kivshua. The iser bal tashchis. We despise destruction. And when we see literally a country fall, literally a society fail because of something that was completely beyond their control, we build it. It's not about giving to this person, that person. I have to check their hashkafos. Do I believe them? Do I not? Do I like what they believe? What they do? That's not what it's about. It's about a country that went under. It's about a society that needs to function. It's about pure devastation. I don't believe Lo Sichanim applies in that case. I don't have a raya, but I don't believe Lo Sichanim would apply in that case. And then there's the third issue, whether or not we should be saying Tehillim for the victims. Interesting discussion. Rav Avadya Yosef was asked by the child of a non-Jew, a ger, who was a child of a non-Jew, and his parents were sick. So the child wanted to know, should I say to him, it's in Chelek Vav of Yechavadas, this tshuva. Is it okay to daven for my parents? So Rav Avadya assumes, based on the halacha in Shulchan Aruch Yerdeya, that it's aser to participate in the refuah of an Oved Avodah Zarah, that if the parents are in fact Oved Avodah Zarah, you can't do anything to aid in their refuah. And he would assume that that would also include davening for them. But then Rav Avadya says, come on. There are many, many reasons why it's absolutely mutter for you to daven for them. First of all, and why you should and you're mechuyev to daven for them. First of all, he says, your parents aren't of the Avodah Zarah, they're Muslims. And the Rambam famously says, Muslims are not of the Avodah Zarah, in his famous letter to the Ger, who was being made fun of, hey, you used to be an Oved Avodah Zarah. So what was the Rambam's response? Tell them that not only are Muslims not Oved Avodah Zarah, if anyone is an Oved Avodah Zarah, it's the people that are getting angry at you. Because Kol HaKoyis Ki'ilu Oved Avodah Zarah. Okay, but that's a different discussion for a different time. So he says, first of all, they're not Oved Avodah Zarah, so it wouldn't even be an issue. Of course you could daven for a regular non-Jew. Second, they ask their son to pray for them. So Rav Avadya says, if they're asking you to pray for them, that shows a sliver of belief in the Jewish God. That shows an inclination toward tshuva. Okay, neither of those considerations necessarily make a difference for us. But then he says, yes, halachically you're not related to them, but they're still your parents. A basic sense of hakaras hatov. They raised you. You're here today because of them. A basic sense of hakaras hatov would demand that you daven for them. And then he says what I think relates most to our case. And that is the well-known story in the Gemara Brachos, where a mayor was being bothered by some not nice people. They would badger him constantly. So what did he do? He davened that they should die. So his wife Beruya, everyone needs a wife to put them in line sometimes. His wife Beruya comes to him and says, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm davening they should die. She said, well, why are you davening that they should die? And he said, well, they're bothering me. And she says, what do you mean? We read in Barchi Nafshi yesterday, right? What's the last line? Yitamu chataim urishaim odeinam. When these sins are gone, there won't be any more rishaim. It does not say yitamu chotim, that let the sinners be wiped out and then urishaim odeinam, there won't be any more rishaim. It says yitamu chataim. When the sins are gone, there won't be any more rishaim. You know what you should do? Pray that they do tshuva. Rav Avadya says to this young man, this ger, daven for your parents. Daven that they should, in good health, be able to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam and to see the light and live productive lives as Bnei Noach, as Geirei Toshav. Nothing wrong with davening for that. So let's say you're inclined not to daven for people you think might be of the Avodah Zarah, which in this case is not even an issue anyway. But let's say you're inclined not to daven for people who are of the Avodah Zarah, at the very least, to daven that they should in good health be able to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. That, I don't think anyone disagrees. I think everyone would hold you could do that. And furthermore, says Rav Avadya, there is a big difference between doing something and davening. You see, davening relies on God. God gets the big bucks because he gets to decide who deserves his mercy and who doesn't. Why don't you daven for them and let the Ribbono Shel Olam figure it out from there? If the Ribbono Shel Olam thinks that they have a din of Avodah Zarah and therefore doesn't want to help them, the Ribbono Shel Olam won't. And if he thinks they don't have a din of Avodah Zarah and therefore they should be helped, your tefillos will help. So of course you daven. We're going to sit there making cheshbonos. Oh, how many people died? And how many of them practice voodoo? And how many? Ribbono Shel'Olam, it's absurd. Let the Ribbono Shel'Olam figure it out. We know, we see tragedy, we daven. That's what a Jew does. And again, I'm talking about these halachos. These halachos are totally irrelevant, I think. Because it's important to highlight, there's an element of just massive human tragedy. It's not about an individual who you can don. Is he an Ovid Avodah Zarah? Is he not an Ovid Avodah? That's not the issue. 100,000 people in a day. You're going to tell me it's about the mazel of this guy, that guy? The best way I could express it is based on the discussion in the poskim. There is a halacha that you're not supposed to name a child after someone who had bad mazel. Reya mazale. For instance, someone gets hit by a truck at the age of 20 before he had a chance to get married, have children. That's Reya mazale. So when you name after someone like that, you add a more cheerful name. You add a Chayim, a Simcha, something. You don't name directly after someone like that. That was bad mazel. So all the poskim were asked, right after the Holocaust. Everyone had brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, who died young in the most devastating ways imaginable. So nu, are you allowed a name after them? And most poskim held, yes, of course you are. You're going to tell me when 6 million Jews died, it's about one guy's mazel? This was so much bigger than them. It was about the mazel of the ganz klal Yisrael. It wasn't the mazel of a single person. It's not an exact parallel, but I think the same thing can be applied over here. A similar idea can be applied over here. You're going to talk about davening for this individual? Fine. On an individual level, you want to daven if a person's Ovid Avodah Zarah. That's not the issue over here. This is so much bigger. This is a human tragedy. It affected so many so quickly. And that's something we always have to daven for. So that's the halachic discussion. Hashkafically, many people have pointed out this week, Jews are first and foremost Rachmanim b'nei Rachmanim. The Gemara defines Jews by three characteristics. Rachmanim, Baishanim, v'gomlei chasadim. What's the difference between number one and number three? Between being a Rachman and a Gomel Chesed? You know what the difference is? A Gomel Chesed is about what we do. A Rachman is about what we feel. It's not enough for a Jew to say, okay, I'll send a check. We feel for people. It's a thankless lot in life to have, to always be so sensitive to other people's troubles. The Gemara in Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Mem Heim Beis, in the bottom, Rashbam in the bottom, Gemara in Pesachim, Kuf Yud Gimel, talks about how Rachmanim are Chayeha Meinam Chayim. Their lives aren't worth living. And the Rashbam in Baba Basra explains, why are their lives not worth living? Because whenever someone is struggling, if that struggle and that suffering becomes your suffering, how are you going to sleep at night, ever? How does one function? How does one not let it get to them? A Rachman suffers along with other people. That's what a Rachman is. Chayei Menam Chayim. It's difficult. No one said it's easy to be a Jew. But a Jew is a Rachman. When a Jew sees suffering, a Jew suffers along with it. It's not easy. It's hard. But if it doesn't bother us, if we're not suffering also, again, check your yichus. A Jew is a rachman. And finally, one last point. The Chafetz Chaim wrote a letter after a major earthquake, I believe it was in Japan, and a series of natural disasters worldwide, where he described how natural disasters in particular, where you can't blame any individual for doing or any group of people for doing something. But a natural disaster where it's clearly an act of God demands significant introspection. Whether it happened to Jews or to non-Jews, it demands the Jew to think about himself, take stock of his life. Says the Chafetz Chaim, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's kedai for everyone here to read the whole thing. V'chalila lanu lomar, God forbid for us to say, ki yad hamikre hoisapo, that this was just happenstance. Ki aleinu ladas, we must know Shakarish Baruch Hu, hu melech adon al kol ha'aretz, that God is the king and the master of the whole world. Kedichsiv b'ktorah kedosha, l'man teida ki l'ashem ha'aretz. Like the Torah says, you have to know that the world belongs to God. Halo tamia gedolahi, mipnei ma ho'ir HaKadosh Baruch Hu on shim noroyim ke'ila al ha'aretz. We can't understand why God did this. These horrible, horrible punishments on this world. You know what he says? We can't understand it. We don't understand it. And to the great credit of the Jewish community this week, I haven't heard left to right anyone say anything too stupid in terms of trying to explain it. We must have fulfilled our quota of stupidity for the year already. You hear, unfortunately, from other circles, people trying to explain why things happen. Ridiculous. We can't. Ela hamevin yavin. But the understanding person should know. Shelo davar pashut hu. Velo bimikra ba'os kol hatzaros va'on shem chas v'shalom. That this didn't happen just because. Just because statistically earthquakes happen every once in a while. Ela hasra'a mishamayim hi lebnei ha'adam asher ba'aretz heima. Sheyashuvu midarkeim ara'im. It's a warning from heaven that we need to do tshuva. We need to think about life. We need to think about what we value. And he goes on to say that when things like this happen, it's a reflection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midas Hadin taking center stage. Typically, God runs the world with Midas HaRachamim. But when things like this happen, it's a reflection of the fact that the Midas Hadin is out there and it's primed and ready to go. And we need to do whatever we can to turn the Ribbono Shlom's Midas Hadin back into a Midas HaRachamim. And the Chafetz Chaim goes on to say, L'pele gadoli, it is unbelievable to me, al ma she'ein ha'olam mefached klal, how people can just go on with their lives, how they're not terrified and trembling. Be'eis shehinenu roim, at the very moment that we see, says the Chafetz Chaim, all of the descriptions of a Nusana Tokef from the Yom Hadin. And we see it in front of our very eyes. Miva cherev, miva ra'av, we see it all. And we're not trembling. So the second critical point, aside from the fact that we are Rachmanim, and Darkei Shalom demands that as members of humanity, we do, we pray, we give. And our love for civilization demands that we do, we pray, we give. But aside from that, as individuals, we need to recognize that this is the din of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we need to take stock of our lives and we need to do teshuva. And through that, hopefully, the Ribbono Shel will see that we're sincere and it will turn his Midas HaDin into a Midas HaRachamim.